On today's episode of Locked On Nets, Josh Bass and Marcus Barrhall give a rapid reaction to the Nets' overtime victory over the New Orleans Pelicans, Spencer Dinwiddie's heroics, Joe Harris's amazing performance, and of course, we all stand David Nwaba coming up next on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm your host, Josh Bass. Joining me, my partner in crime, Marcus Barrhall. Marcus, two podcasts in one day. The kids will be talking about it for ages to come.
You know, they do 2 days in the NFL. It's not as common in podcasting, but here we are, Josh. A mere, 14 and a half hours after we recorded our previous podcast. We're back, baby.
We're back. We're back and better than ever. I think we've really honed in our skills in these last 14 and a half hours, and it will be 15 by the end of this episode.
True, true.
Because that's how time works.
Yeah, it's going to keep going.
Yeah, so Marcus, we just finished watching. It was something. It was definitely something. It wasn't entertaining. It wasn't well played, but it was a win by the Brooklyn Nets in overtime. Over the New Orleans Pelicans, 108-101. Any road win is certainly a good one in the NBA. It was not a particularly aesthetic game to watch, but the Nets got it done thanks to some Joe Harris heroics, Spencer Dinwiddie playing well, especially going to the basket. I think there'll be some interesting stuff to talk about, particularly as it relates to some of the new guys on the bench and how people are meshing. What were your overall impressions from the game?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I guess it was technically basketball in that first half.
I think
the Pelicans definitely it looked a little different, but I guess it was basketball. They missed, I think it wound up being 18 straight shots at one point in a stretch, like across multiple quarters, which was just kind of an affront. Nearly blinded me at one point. I wear glasses anyway, but I did consider getting a stronger prescription just to see maybe there was something I was missing going on. Maybe they had switched the rules. But no, the Pelicans just kind of missed everything. And yet still, they weren't down by very much. They came back, they took the lead, and it wound up being, I think, like a fun overtime and like stretch run of the fourth quarter after like a couple of not great quarters to start, really on either end from either team. But yeah, I mean, I saw you tweeting this during the game. I was impressed by the Pelicans' length on defense. I thought that they rebounded the ball really well, again, probably due to that length, but they just shot so terribly. And the Nets didn't shoot very well either, but they kind of were a little more timely, looked a little more cohesive on offense, and at the end of the day, they're just like a much better team. So I think that was what willed them to victory down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted it, and as you mentioned, like, I can't believe the Pelicans are third worst in defensive rating given kind of all their size and length. And I know Favors was out for a big period of time this year, but, you know, they definitely have the tools, and they were grinding. It wasn't like the Nets were just missing wide open look after look. They were really getting into them, and that starts with Jrue Holiday. And when you have a guy that can provide that ball pressure against this Nets team right now, which is so reliant on Dinwiddie, it's going to be tough for them to get going. But yeah, I mean, on offense, the Pelicans were just like a collection of guys throwing out garbage. Like, there wasn't any cohesive like way that they were moving the ball. They didn't get up in transition as much as you'd expect from an Alvin Gentry team. Certainly agree with you on you needing a stronger prescription. I think all you need to do is show them like Kenrich Williams' shot chart, and they'd be like, okay, yes, highest prescription possible. The one bright spot for the Pelicans, I'd say Jackson Hayes looked amazing.
Yeah, he looked really, really good. It was kind of a blessing once he picked up his fifth foul early in the fourth, because the Pelicans had to pull him at that point, and that's when the Nets kind of turned around and went up by a few points. They wound up choking that away down the stretch, but that was definitely a key. He was playing really well on both ends of the floor, but it just seemed like he had a ton of energy. And then going back to the defense for New Orleans, you mentioned Jrue Holiday. Lonzo also had like a ton of deflections. Derek Favors, in the run that he was getting, was doing a good job staying vertical. Hayes too. So yeah, they were kind of able to cover a lot of ground and like make up for the fact that like even when the Nets had like nice ball movement, nice swing passes, they were able to either deflect passes out of bounds to kind of stop momentum or kind of recover on switches and that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, and especially like when the Nets bench unit, I mean, they just don't have the talent to get by like strong defenders. And like you look at the stats from this game, Torian Prince was horrible, 1 of 9 from three. Garrett Temple, 2 of 14, 1 of 6 from three. Like when those two guys are shooting that poorly, it's gonna be hard for the Nets to win, but they were able to pull it out. I thought Nwaba was a standout. He had some.
Oh my god, yeah,
he was so good. And Chandler had some nice moments on the bench. Really, I mean, TLC was fine. I think the bench overall played well, besides Pinson, who was just like shot 3 of the worst 3-pointers I've ever seen in my life. All of them were like pretty clean look. One was kind of a force on his end. The other two were super clean off the catch, and they didn't even come close. He was just bricking them side rim. I mean, I don't see how they can still be giving him any time to play.
Yeah, I mean, Kenny kind of went to Temple as the backup point guard like later in the second half, and it was like him and Chandler together were like a little bit taking turns doing that. They even like they kept Dinwiddie in, I think, longer than they would have normally, and just had like either Temple bring it up or Joe Harris bring it up and then kind of hand it off to Dinwiddie, so he wasn't as much on the ball, like kind of resting him on the court in a way, which is something that like LeBron has done and James Harden does, and like a lot of those like high usage guys where you can't really afford to have them sit, but you also like they're going to get worn down if you give them the ball for the first like 17 seconds of every possession. So just kind of having other guys who can at least capably bring it up and like initiate the offense was good to see, at least from that perspective for Temple. Because like you said, he couldn't hit anything. I know it was like vaguely a homecoming game for him. Mm-hmm. They were talking about it on the broadcast.
Bayou guy.
He's from Baton Rouge, went to LSU. So I know he had a lot of family in attendance. Maybe he was pressing, but yeah, it was another bad game for Prince also, which is like continuing a bad stretch for him.
He was so bad. And also you like, especially in the first quarter, this was weird. He like kept gambling for steals. Did you notice that?
I didn't.
He was like, there was like 3 plays in a row. He was just like wildly going for it. And that was what was leading to the Jarrett Allen blocks on Brandon Ingram. Mm. He had 4 of them on Ingram alone in the first quarter. And the reason why is because Ingram would have a free lane to the basket every time, because Torian Prince was basically in the backcourt after his momentum carried him after going for the steal. Ingram would go in, and Jarrett Allen did an amazing job with verticality. I mean, didn't think he had the best game overall. He got beasted on the boards a lot, especially in the second half, but his rim protection was undeniable and did a nice job finishing some lobs. But I mean, Ingram went at him multiple times, 4 or 5, and just had 0 success.
Yeah, I mean, I was like kind of hoping that Jared Allen would have like a triple-double with blocks. Didn't wind up happening, but he was on pace for way more than that in the first quarter. That was crazy.
He was on pace for 23 blocks after one quarter. But I think like, would you have considered at all potentially swapping out either or of Prince or Temple in crunch time for Nwaba or even Chandler? Because I think Nwaba definitely could have deserved to play. Chandler, I get it. Even though he's the cardio king, you don't want to give him more than kind of like 18 minutes coming back. But Nwaba, I think, definitely could have taken Temple's spot given that he was struggling that much.
Yeah, Nwaba was awesome. Like, he was hitting threes. He was making plays.
They were difficult looks also.
Yeah, a ton of cuts and like also just like pushing the pace and transition, like just sprinting down court even when he didn't have the ball. Like, he got a couple nice plays. He had that really sweet and one that he finished and then flexed on the Pelicans bench, where he was just like giving more of an effort than anyone on the court and just beat everyone down there. Prince, I think, hit him with a nice bounce pass to kind of push things, but just his effort, energy, intensity, and the fact that he was making shots, which is like not always the case with him. Like, you know he's gonna bring the energy on defense and kind of motivate everyone else out there on the court. But if he's also hitting shots, I feel like that's the time where you can kind of ride him. I definitely would have played him more down the stretch, probably over Prince, just because Temple at least gives you a little bit more of like a secondary ball handler with this lineup that they've been playing. Prince is more just like a catch-and-shoot guy right now.
Yeah, I guess he does have some size at least to bother Brandon Ingram, even though Ingram did get going late. And I think he hit 4 of his last 5 shots and drew some fouls against Prince, so he wasn't stopping him that well. But, I mean, I think Nwaba is probably pound for pound the best defender on the Nets right now. And he had that really nice block in the first quarter where he pinned it against the glass. I mean, he was everywhere. And I think it's crazy to see his rise from someone that we liked at the start of the season, was getting some time, then was out of the rotation for a while, and then just seized his opportunity when Kenny gave it to him. And he's now become a fixture for this Nets team. And he's going to be one of the few guys on the bench right now that are still going to be seeing minutes once Kyrie and Karis come back.
Yeah, I'm very happy for him. I'm glad that he's gotten this opportunity, and he's really made the most of it, like you said. I mean, he was far and away the best guy off the bench for the Nets in this game.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree on that. He deserves a good night's sleep tonight, and you know what's going to give him that? It's Casper. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep service with the right amount of both sink and bounce. We know how important both those things are, especially bounce in the NBA. Get $100 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/lockedonNBA at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. If you can't visit Casper right now, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. Go check it out. Marcus, what more can we say about Dinwiddie? Obviously, his three-point shot wasn't falling, and it's maybe a bit concerning. 1 of 8, some really poor shot selection late, including that last play of the fourth quarter, which actually ended up screwing the Pelicans out of getting the ball with about 2 seconds left in a tie game, because it should have been a shot clock violation. But, I mean, 11 free throws, the guy was just getting downhill with ease. He has more layups than anyone in the league at this point. It's crazy.
Yeah, his driving game is, like, very refined because, I mean, we know he's, like, very fast and he can kind of just blow by guys in a straight line kind of way, but he had a lot of really nice plays in this game where he would get a step on usually Jrue Holiday, who was his defender for most of the night, and then once he saw the help coming on the rotation, like, there was a couple that I remember specifically where it was Lonzo coming over to rotate, and Lonzo's just flying in because he's thinking Dinwiddie's running full speed. That's the only way he's able to get past a great defender like Holiday, so I'm going to run in full speed and I'm going to jump up and try to block it. And Dinwiddie just kind of decelerates enough where mm-hmm. he allows Lonzo to fly by him, but also is like keeping Holiday on his hip pin so that he has the advantage kind of on both guys, and just he got right to the basket on those drives. That happened a lot down the stretch in the fourth quarter and going into overtime, and it's just like really precise like body control and court awareness to be able to see that like Lonzo's coming in from this side and Holiday is at this side. I need to contort my body so that I'm kind of right in between both of them. Almost like when you're splitting a double team off a pick, like you have to get into that very narrow sliver of space so that you can get to that exact spot you need to. And he's able to do that on drives really, really well. He's playing at such a high level right now.
Yeah, no, it's insane. I mean, he's playing with so much confidence, and I think, you know, like I get frustrated, and I think a lot of people do, with some of the shots where he's just trying to throw it up and draw a foul, but that's part of the overall package with him, and that's what allows him to be very successful going to the rim and pick up cheap foul calls at times. So I think it's something that you have to live with, and overall, as he continues to do this and over the years has really improved his reputation around the league, he's going to get more and more foul, like superstar foul calls, so to speak.
Right, yeah. I mean, there was that piece a couple years ago, I think it was actually by Chris Herring, who wrote for 538 that Dinwiddie was, like, the recipient of the most, like, bad calls or blown calls. Yeah, exactly. Our guy. But yeah, Dinwiddie, definitely, like, you and I both know he complains a ton to the refs, and, like, in the past it's been warranted, but I have noticed that he's not complaining quite as much, and maybe that's because he's getting a couple more of those calls. He went to the line 11 times in this game, so I don't know, maybe he's getting that recognition that we've wanted.
Yeah, I don't know, I feel like he's still complaining just as much.
No, yeah,
because it's not like a big complaint every time. It's just like a small complaint literally every call now, like every made basket should have been an and one, and every shot he throws up should have been a foul.
Yeah, he's not like getting in refs' faces as much, I feel like.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, that was really out of control 2 seasons ago when, like, especially at end of games, he wasn't getting calls. Like, the iconic one where he just talks into the Yes TV camera and says, this is exactly yes. what I was talking about. so it's definitely gotten better than that low point.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that moment so clearly. That was like before Dame Lillard hit that big shot and turned to the camera. That was like the most iconic NBA player to a camera mm-hmm. moment.
Uh-huh. And now we have everyone breaking the fourth wall.
Mm, so true.
Yeah. What about Joe Harris? I mean, he like continues to amaze me. He had some really great drives. Obviously, that huge three off balance in overtime, which gave the Nets a 6-point lead. 5 of 9 from three on the night. Like, it's just like, I think we say it time and time again, like, it's crazy how good he's gotten. But he is like, what do you say right now on this current Nets roster? So the guys that are healthy right now, is he the second best player on this team?
I think so. He's definitely the second most consistent. Jared Allen definitely has nights where he's more impactful just because of what he can do defensively. But I think night to night, Joe Harris probably is the Nets second best player right now. And he didn't have like the best start to this game. He was 3 for 9 mm-hmm. at one point, finished 8 for 15. So he went 5 for his last 6 from the field. And he really heated up down the stretch, like right when the Nets needed him. And it just kind of goes to show that like he's never going to have like a full bad game. Like he's too good of a shooter. He works too hard. He had a really nice box out on Jackson Hayes at one point down the stretch. He's just a guy who, if he's not hitting his shots, he can recognize that and he can find other ways to contribute. He can cut off ball. He can box guys out, like I just mentioned. He just is. He's really good at like finding places to contribute.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. Like, he always finds a way to make some sort of impact in the game, even when his shot's not falling. And like, his 3-point percentage has declined this year from 47.4 to about 43 going into tonight's game. Obviously, it'll be higher. But I'd love to see the percentage of threes that are wide open from last year to this year. I'm sure that something like Clean Glass might have these statistics, but like, or Synergy. But I'm sure that percentage has gone way down because he's taking so many like tough threes, deep threes, really improving his game off of screens. He's become so much more than just a guy who's going to knock shots down off the catch. He's really become kind of a J.J. Redick type, someone who can hit all types of threes. And that adds so much versatility to an offense.
Yeah, and like winning the three-point contest, being on Team USA, like those kind of things definitely rose his profile. And like, I'm sure the guys in the league like knew about him, like other players just from scouting and from playing against him. But definitely like casual fans, coaches, maybe even broadcasters, that kind of thing. Everyone's like way more aware now. And so it might even just be that like you can feel it in the energy in the air. Like if a ball gets thrown to him behind the 3-point line and he's open, like the crowd is kind of expecting him to launch it. I remember like being at Nets games late last season where like he catches the ball on the outside and you kind of see a bunch of guys in the crowd like raise up their arm with the 3-point fingers held up, like, okay, he's about to shoot it. So he's definitely earned that reputation. So with that comes tougher looks because guys are going to close out harder. But Nets fans know Joe Harris, also a great driver. So he's like had more lanes open up. He's had a couple, he had a couple good drives in this game where he was able to finish. Not quite the contortionist that Dinwiddie is, but still, he is like a lot better at driving, I think, than he gets credit for.
That's our beef jerky Joe for you. he is something else. And someone that has, I think, like he's him and Dinwiddie, like to see these two guys leading the team now, and like they're both kind of the like really like testament to Sean Marks for kind of scanning the waiver wire and the Nets player development system headed up by Kenny, like to lead this team to the playoffs now. Given that even though you have all these big signings in Kyrie and KD, but obviously KD's out this year, Kyrie's been hurt for 16 games and counting with apparently no end in sight. So it's refreshing to see that really the Nets are still succeeding thanks to their roots, which is that player development culture.
Yeah, 11-5 now without Kyrie. Hopefully those guys come back soon, but it does seem like the Nets have definitely like righted the ship and are more than capable without those guys.
Absolutely. It has been a pleasure to have this ride with them, and it's been a pleasure to have this podcast with you, Marcus. Before we wrap up, we're sponsored today by Breaking Tea. If you're looking for a last-minute fun sports gift for the holidays, and aren't we all, go to BreakingTea.com/LockedOn. Breaking Tea makes sports t-shirts around teams' passion moments, like a Joe Harris great layup. It's great for all fans. Go to BreakingTee.com/lockedon and then feel free to search the site for great shirts and fun sports gifts. Marcus, we'll be back in the listeners' ears later this week. The Nets have a game against the Spurs on Thursday in San Antonio. Maybe they'll go take a trip to the Alamo, get some Tex-Mex, and then be prepared to get that W against San Antonio. Of course, you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean, we're everywhere. Rate us, review us, and of course, subscribe. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. I am at JMBass_. And until next time, be well.
Bye.